Have you ever walked into a room and found a vampire? No, not the sexy kind, but a foul creature with bony limbs and ashen skin. The kind that snarls as you enter, like a beast about to pounce. The kind that roots you to the spot with its sunken, hypnotic eyes, rendering you unable to flee as you watch the hideous thing uncoil from the shadows. Has your heart started racing, though your legs refuse to? Have you felt time slow as the creature crosses the room in the darkness of a blink? Have you shuddered with fear when it places one clawed hand atop your head and another under your chin so it can tilt you, exposing your neck? Have you ever squirmed as its rough, dry tongue slides down your cheek, over your jaw, to your throat, in a slithering search that's seeking your artery? Have you felt its hot breath release in a hiss against your skin when it probes your pulse, the flow that leads to your brain? Has its tongue rested there, throbbing slightly, as if savoring the moment? Have you then experienced a sinking, sucking blackness as you discover that not all vampires feed on blood, some feed on memories? Well, have you? Maybe not. But let me rephrase the question. Have you ever walked into a room and suddenly forgotten why you came in? Next time you'll know better. Hello, good evening, and welcome to another episode of The Haunted Collection with your host, author, paranormal investigator, and haunted collector, Kevin Kane. That's me. I hope you're having a good new year. This is our first show of 2019, and I'm excited to be back for a new year and more creepy, scary, spine-tingling stories. I can't wait to share more of my findings. I hope your new year has been as spooktacular as mine. All right, without further ado, let's get on to our new additions to the Haunted Collection. Tonight, our first story has been around for a little while now. It was popular in Japan. It's become a little popular in the U.S. and all over the world now, especially since it's been turned into a creepypasta. It's a story you can find on YouTube. It's a little ditty we call, "He Is Not My Son." My son went missing 2 weeks ago. Like a good parent, I filed a police complaint. I participated in the search efforts, and I was heartbroken when they could not find any trace of him. I gave up. I asked the cops to give up, too. It was just too hopeless, I said. They did not give up. 1 week ago, two of the police officers turned up at my door, triumphant smiles on their faces, and standing in front of them was my son. They said they had found him wandering in the woods beyond the edge of town. He looked much worse for the wear, but otherwise unscathed. They left him with me and went back to their station. He is not my son. He looked like my son, spoke like my son, and even behaved like my son. He settled in with me, but please believe me, he's not my son. Every night since that day that they brought him here, I've woken up in the middle of the night in a cold sweat, waking from nightmares I don't understand, sitting up to find him in the doorway of my room, his hollow eyes staring at me, staring through me, his body silhouetted by the nightlight from the hallway behind him. He then always leaves before I can say a word, before I can move, to break the paralysis of fear. Please, you have to trust me. Whatever he is not my son. Why, you ask, do I seem so sure that he's not my son? Because I killed my son 2 weeks ago and buried him in the forest. A nice little short horrific ditty there. Be sure to look up the creepypasta of He Is Not My Son, and you can watch the wonderful animation that they've created for the YouTube video that's out there. Don't you just love creepypastas? It just hardly gets any better than that. Sends a nice chill through your bones. Okay, kiddos, are you ready for the next story? This story is sort of an older urban legend that's been around since around the 60s, maybe early 70s. Back when hippies roamed the country and drugs were abounding everywhere from sea to shining sea. Yes, some of those hippies and young people were quite crazy and did very strange things, much like the girl in our story tonight. We call this story Oven Ready. Mr. and Mrs. Collins received a last-minute invitation to a very important cocktail party at the country club. It was the sort of invitation they had been hoping to get for more than 2 long years. And now that it had finally arrived, even at the last moment, they were very much thrilled. Naturally, they wouldn't be able to take their 6-month-old baby son, Christopher, to the party. And they needed a babysitter very badly. Lucy Collins quickly called her regular babysitter, but found the girl already had a date that evening. Her second choice babysitter had another job that evening, so did the third and the fourth and so on. Mrs. Collins was getting a bit frantic. She was afraid that she would have to miss the cocktail party after all, an enormous disappointment since she had waited so long and wished so hard for the invitation. She called her regular babysitter back to plead with the girl to break her date and do her a favor just this once. The girl's date was every bit as important to her as the cocktail party was to Mrs. Collins, and so she once again refused. Still, the girl felt very sorry for Mrs. Collins. The mistress was pleading and asking her if she knew of anyone, anybody at all, someone somewhere, who was free that evening to babysit for Christopher. The girl thought for a moment. She knew these last-minute jobs were always hard to arrange, particularly on a busy Saturday night. After all, this was date night for most high school and college girls. Mentally, the girl ticked off a list of names, discarding first this one and then that one because she knew that they would be very busy with their own dates and social lives, especially on this Saturday night at the last minute. Then the girl remembered Carrie Barker. Sure, Carrie was a little weird, a little mixed up, but basically she was a good kid, eager to please, and she would probably welcome the job. She didn't get many sitting jobs because most parents didn't like her looks. "Well, if you are really desperate," the girl said, "there's Carrie Barker. She doesn't live too far. I'll give you her phone number." Mistress Collins was deeply grateful for the information. Right away, she called Carrie Barker. On the phone, Carrie sounded strange, a bit out of touch. But she was perfectly willing to babysit and said she would come right over. By the time Mistress Collins made the arrangements on the phone, Mr. Collins was pacing up and down, anxiously looking at his watch. It was all right to be a little late to a cocktail party, but if you were too late, then everyone would notice. And that was not a good idea. When the doorbell rang, finally signaling the arrival of the sitter, he was very much relieved.
"Thank God, she's finally here," he said.
It was easy to see why Carrie Barker had trouble getting babysitting jobs. When they opened the door to her, they saw her appearance right away. Her clothes were strange, and her hair was wildly unkempt, sticking out around her ears and somewhat a little bit in the back. Most unsettling and disturbing was the distant, almost vacant look in her eyes. As Mistress Collins showed Carrie around the house, the baby's room, the kitchen, and the bathroom, the girl moved almost like a sleepwalker, just shuffling along beside her. When Mistress Collins presented Carrie with a piece of paper on which she had written a name and number where they could be reached in case of emergency, the girl didn't even glance at it, but crumpled it and pushed it into the pocket of her jeans. Carrie Barker's appearance and actions were so strange that Mrs. Collins toyed with the idea of making up some excuse, paying the girl off, and then just staying home herself with Christopher, although her husband would be very ticked off about this. She asked Mr. Collins to step into the bedroom to have a discussion right quick, leaving Carrie in the hallway. The couple had a heated, whispered conversation about this for a few moments. Mr. Collins finally convinced his wife, putting his foot down, saying there was nothing really wrong with the new sitter.
"It's just the way kids are today."
And so, with a considerable feeling of unease hanging over her, Mistress Collins was persuaded to go to the party, leaving her baby boy behind with the sitter. The feeling of doom grew on Mistress Collins, first on the ride from the house to the party, and then as the evening wore on. While others walked around the party chatting and laughing, sharing funny stories and clinking their glasses together in toasts, Mistress Collins stood grimly in a corner, hardly talking to anyone. Her husband came by to check on her.
"At least try to look like you're having a good time," he muttered.
It was no use. She was much too anxious to enjoy herself, or even pretend to. Mistress Collins found a phone and called her home. "Hello." The voice sounded hollow, but it was definitely Carrie Barker's.
"Oh, hello, Carrie. I'm just calling to see if everything is all right."
"Oh, sure, Mrs. Collins. I've made dinner for when you get home. The turkey's in the oven."
"Oh, that's nice, dear. Thank you so much."
And she ended the call. It was only after she hung up that the shock hit Mistress Collins full head on.
"Turkey? What turkey?"
There was no turkey in the house. She rushed up to her husband and said, "We've got to go home at once. Something terrible may have happened."
He tried to calm her, but she was not to be put off this time. Rather than have his wife make a scene, Mr. Collins made some hasty excuses to their hosts, and they left. He was angry, but she stayed frightened the whole way home, and they didn't talk much while he drove. When they arrived and opened the door, they were greeted by the smell of cooking when they entered the house. The dining room table was set with the family's best china and crystal. The lights had been turned out, and there were candles lit on the table, the flames licking at the shadows. Carrie was standing in the kitchen. "Turkey's almost ready," she said. "See what I made?" She opened the oven door and revealed the baby inside. The police were called quickly and investigated the scene. It was determined that the girl Carrie had been high on drugs. Her brain had been so messed up that she had mistaken baby Christopher for a turkey. Oh, what a horrible story, wouldn't you say? Feel so sorry for that family, but you have to watch out who you ask to take care of your children. Never be in a hurry. No matter how important the event is that you need to go to, always carefully check out your babysitters. You might think that story was a fake story, an urban legend, but I found out a few years ago that actually there was a similar incident up in Maine a good 30 years ago. But it was the mother who was fried on drugs and accidentally cooked her baby. Very sad, but very creepily, crazily scary to find out that an urban legend actually has some truth to it. And now for our final story of this episode. This next story is a more recent tale. It's called This New Old House. My name is Bobby. I bought an old house, and my girlfriend and I moved in as we pursued deepening our relationship. We were planning to get married soon. The house was sort of a fixer-upper. I decided to take charge of the construction, such as converting the kitchen into the master bedroom and making other changes to the house because it definitely needed updating. My girlfriend decided to work on the wallpaper removal, for the wallpaper was quite strange in that house. The previous owner papered every wall and ceiling. Very strange wallpaper, some of which I'd never seen before. Removing it was definitely brutal, but oddly satisfying. I decided to help my girlfriend with some of those rooms, and we found the best feeling is getting a long peel, similar to like when your skin is peeling from a sunburn. I don't know about you, but I kind of make a game of peeling, on the hunt for the longest piece before it rips. And getting that mess off, getting rid of it, that unsightly stuff. As we proceeded with our project, we noticed under a corner section of paper, at every room is a person's name and date. As we went from one room to the next, pulling that strange paper, we found in every corner a person's name and a date. How strange this was. Later that evening, when my girlfriend went to bed, I stayed up. I slipped into the office room we had made up and turned on our computer. Just out of curiosity, worse than a cat, I tell you, my curiosity got the best of me. I decided to Google one of the names and dates in that room there. To my surprise, I discovered the person came up as actually being a missing person. The missing date matched the date under the wallpaper with that name. Hurriedly, and on a hunch, I went from room to room, making a list of the names and dates, making sure I kept them together
so I could Google search each one. Sure enough, each name and date came up showing a missing person with dates to match. We notified the police the next morning after breakfast. They didn't seem as interested at first, but decided to send out a car to check on what we were finding in our house, if nothing else but to satisfy us. So out came the officer knocking on our door. I showed him inside and took him around to the room, showed him the dates and the names we had found under this strange wallpaper. In a few of the rooms, we had not completely pulled the paper off. I showed him the list of names and dates where I'd Googled, but his curiosity kept going back to the paper. He examined a piece of it closely. Hastily, he suddenly ushered myself and my girlfriend from the house, asking us to wait outside while he called for a few more officers and a crime scene team. What is going on here? I thought to myself. The few other officers showed up, a tech group showed up. They went in the house exploring, looking at the paper, the strange paper clinging to the walls. As they were going back and forth to and from the house, I overheard one of the techs say to the other, "Yep, it's human." Human? What did I just hear? Human? What's human? I hurried over to one of the officers and pulled him aside. "Sir, I just heard one of your techs say that something was human in there. But what is he talking about?" The officer pulled me further aside. "Sir, calm down. I do need to ask you a question. Where did you put the material that you've already removed from those walls?" "Why are you asking me about this paper?" I pushed at him, pleading for an answer. "Sir," he replied, "the wallpaper you were removing was not paper." And so I'll leave you to ponder that story right there. Makes you wonder who the prior owner was of that house. Perhaps a serial killer? Or perhaps an escaped mental patient hiding out there before it was sold? Definitely let this be a lesson when you decide to buy your next house. Be sure to check out the prior owners and the history. And for the love of all humanity, make sure that the paper on the wall is definitely paper. Ooh, kiddos, that was one creepy, grotesque story, and I shall leave you with that. This has been The Haunted Collection with your host, Kevin Kane, and I look forward to the next episode in a few weeks where I'll share some more spine-tingling tales. Until then, as always, happy hauntings!